It's the weekend, and you have financial questions that need answering. That can only mean one thing. It's time for Jill on Money, the show that takes the mystery out of your finances. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
Welcome to Jill on Money. We are delighted that you're joining us. If you have a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number here is 855-411-JILL. Our email address, askjill@jillonmoney.com. You know, I was reading one of my wonky, weird insider financial journals, and there's an article written by my pal, a guy named Michael Kitsis. He is a certified financial planner. He's got like a zillion designations after his name, but he's a very interesting guy. And he notes that, sometimes people were so hyper about saving for retirement. And he said, you know, it may be that actually some people are, in fact, saving more than they need. I know that's like runs contrary to everything you've ever heard. But I think he's talking about, you know, one slice of the population. But here's what I thought was incredibly interesting that he writes. And he said there is some academic research that has found having cash on hand in a checking or savings account was directly correlated with life satisfaction, even after controlling for investments and total spending and indebtedness. In other words, it wasn't about your need for cash, but actually just having it made people feel better. I found that to be so interesting. Because sometimes we give advice here and it's not exactly, oh my God, you have to have, you know, this much money, but it's really talking about what could make you feel more comfortable financially. That's part of what we do. Okay, let's start with a caller. Brandon is up first. Brandon is from San Antonio, Texas. How are you, Brandon? Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jill. I'm doing great.
Good. What can I do for you?
We have been into the passive investing and portfolios for a while now, starting back into the early 2000s. But when we started that, there weren't nearly as many products as you see out there today. And we got started for my wife's money. After we got married, she had some money that we needed to transition out of an active strategy into this passive approach. And we went with TD Ameritrade at the time.
Okay.
And so that's worked out well. It was annually rebalanced, and we liked the strategy. But they have started to move in a new direction. And when they started moving in a new direction, they're doing what they're calling these essential portfolios. And to transition to those, because they're dropping their old product, mm-hmm. and my understanding of that, it's because they're trying to compete with the robo-advisors
mm-hmm.
and to try to meet the fiduciary standard. And they're telling us we have to transition this money out of those accounts. So we're looking at that, and there's going to be a tax implication for us. And so we decided to open our aperture and look at other companies doing this. And there are a myriad of choices out there now. And what I'm noticing, though, they're citing the same literature, Fahman French and the Efficient Frontiers and all the stuff that you hear within this kind of product class, they have very different asset allocations. And while I used to be kind of confident that I understood what kind of allocation I wanted, as I'm starting to see this wide variety of allocations, all from Betterment or from TD Ameritrade and even Vanguard, I'm kind of getting into kind of paralysis of analysis and just really looking for some advice from you on what to look at.
So really interesting question, Brandon. So first, let me just come back at you. How old are you and how old is your wife?
So I'm 47, she's 44.
Okay. And because you said there would be some tax event by changing the account at TD Ameritrade, so this is basically a taxable investment account, and how much is in that account?
So that account has $179K in it, and to transition to their essential funds could generate about anywhere between 30 to 14K of capital gains.
No, thank you.
We're not that interested, but it's going to... They're going to stop that product, so it's going to happen to us. So we said, well, my wife's very upset about that, by the way. So she's like, well, then I'm going to look at other options. And that's
okay.
Kind of what we started researching. We started looking at fees because I'm more aware of fees now. And maybe we just kind of go a new direction.
Let me ask you something. The 179, okay, how is it invested right now? In index funds at TD?
Yeah, it was an old product with Amerivest, and it had about, I think, 15 different assets going from all different classes. Everything from, you know, just the basic spread across an efficient portfolio from small bonds. It was aggressive portfolio because we're in accumulation phase and had international, had small cap, fairly diversified.
If you called up Fidelity, Vanguard, and you said, I want to open a brokerage account and I want to move everything that exists in my TD account to that new account, would those new accounts be able to hold what you held in your TD account?
Absolutely. Even TD could do that. Yes, absolutely.
All right. Well, then let's wait. Just hold it. Okay. So let's be smart about this for a second.
Okay.
The answer is no, you're not going to incur a tax liability for no reason. That's stupid.
Okay.
And if your wife is hating on TD, then I would just move the account as is. Do not take a tax hit. And do not take a tax. Why would you take a tax hit when you want to. You can control this to some extent. So then what I would do is I would move it someplace where I'm not going to have a tax event, and I'm going to hold that account. Are you adding new money to that account?
Yes.
If you like the funds, fine. Just make sure that the funds that you own are tax efficient, right? And if they are mostly index funds, they are. You know, when you have a non-retirement account, a plain old taxable account, as you are realizing, you have to pay very close attention to the implications of what your investments are generating on a tax basis. So usually we like the index fund world because it doesn't create a tax liability. Now, when you're talking about different robo-advisors and what they would do, the problem with moving all the money over to a robo is that you would probably have the exact same problem. You would have to blow out of everything. I don't want you to do that.
We don't either.
Yeah. So if you tell me I've got some huge loss and I'm delta neutral, I mean, like I basically have no tax event if I sold everything and started anew, that's one thing. In terms of what the different approaches are, they do all have somewhat slightly different takes on this. So you're right that, you know, one might have small caps, one might have international. I tend to be more of a generalist. I like a little bit of everything. I prefer some international exposure because even if the U.S. markets are doing well this year, I think over time we know that international and emerging markets are, it's good to have an allocation there. And it, even though small caps did really well last year, but not so well the year before, again, it's great to have some small allocation to small caps. So just so you're clear, there's no secret sauce. The secret sauce is that you're a diligent investor, you stick to your game plan, you try like really hard to minimize your tax liability. And really, when you think about the big picture, you keep socking away as much money as you can, and that is your secret sauce. How about that?
Yep, we're on to that sauce already.
I love that sauce. That's my two cents. So I think I know that you've said you had analysis paralysis. I hope this helps you realize that, you know, the only thing you really need to do right now is talk to your wife about whether she can hold her nose and just stay at a TD brokerage account or whether you're going to move the account elsewhere but not sell everything.
Got it. Yeah, right. That sounds great. I think she's going to appreciate listening to this, and it'll clear up a lot of things for her, I think.
That's right. Here at Jill on Money, we create marital bliss for you as well. If you've got a financial question, give us a holler, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
The cure to your financial problems could be a phone call away. 855-411-JILL is the number to dial. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we want to hear from you. But if you're a voyeur and you want to hear other people's financial questions, you can go to previous shows. Check out our YouTube channel. Just search Jill Schlesinger. Our podcast, Better Off. Subscribe today. All right, let's go talk to Andrea from New York. Hi, Andrea. What can I do for you?
Well, I, like many of my fellow graduates, graduated post-recession and with a swell of around $50,000 in student loan debt. And after about 10 years of overpaying the minimum payments. I've finally knocked that down to around $25,000. And I'm in a position in this year to be able to kick it to the curb and move on to some more lucrative financial decisions than just paying off. So I'm in a place where I have some concerns about first actually paying off this big milestone and that effect on my credit score. And then also dealing with, living in an expensive city like New York, paying off some credit card debt, and which one, makes more sense to pay off first.
Mm-hmm.
At this point.
Okay, let's just go down the list here. So when we're talking about the education loans, what's the interest rate on that?
I said it about 6.25%.
Okay. Credit card. How much did you say you have in credit card debt?
I have around $8,000 in credit card debt.
And what's the interest rate on that debt?
Interest rate is sitting at 13%.
What's higher, 13 or 6.25?
So that becomes
your priority.
And on top of paying off of my debt, I've also been saving into a 401k. I have a little bit of a purse that's my emergency fund, and then have also been putting money into ETFs to make some more money on putting that money away, so that is what I'm going to be able to pay off the loan with at the end of the year.
How much money is in the ETF account?
So the two separate ones, currently in the student loan payoff, there's around $16,000.
Mm-hmm.
And in my safety net, there's approximately $13,000.
Well, we don't want you to really touch the safety net because we want you to have a safety net, right? So that's number one. The ETF account, the 16 grand that's in there, is there a tax liability associated with selling that?
Yes, there is.
What would the tax be? Do you know what your cost basis is? Give me a general sense of that. Do you have an idea?
I don't have a sense of.
Okay, so you've been doing it for a while. You'll have to pay some taxes. Okay, I'm going to give you the certified financial planner in me, and I am the CFP board senior ambassador, so I get to tell you this. The CFP in me wants to say, sell that ETF account, pay your tax that's due, pay off the $8,000 that's on the credit card. Pay it off. You're done. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Next, you will have some money left over. The safety net, is that enough for you? How much money do you earn?
I take home post taxes around $50,000.
Okay. So, do you feel like your safety net is 6 to 12 months of your living expenses? Is that...
It's definitely, I'd say, around 4 months.
Okay.
I'd be far more comfortable somewhere between 6 and 8, obviously.
So here's what I would do. I'd sell out the ETF account. I'd use the proceeds to pay off your credit card debt. And then I would take whatever's left over and put it into your safety net account. Now you're going to be set, right? Hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly what your tax liability is. Okay. So without the credit card debt and without putting money into an ETF account, if I took that chunk of money, can you direct that towards paying down the credit card debt? The student loan debt? Can you take that amount of money?
Absolutely.
And what is that on a monthly basis, would you guess?
On a monthly basis right now, I'm paying approximately $600 a month, and that's in addition to continuing to put money into the ETF.
I would stop putting money into a risk asset. This is going to be heresy for some people, but I think this is a more conservative approach. My approach would be you take all of your available cash flow and you pay down that student loan debt and you get rid of it. And that's how you deal with it. And you keep putting money. What I'd like you to do is to keep putting money into a retirement account.
Mm-hmm.
While you are paying down your student loans. The credit card's going to be gone. That's a big, should be alleviate some of the pain point for you.
Definitely.
But I think if you now redirect your money and you push it into that credit card and do retirement savings, then you're going to be in good shape. Do you, through work, do you have a retirement account or not?
We do. Our company has a standard 401k that I've been putting money into since I was in college. I match it. Our company alleviated, unfortunately, the company match for one whole year, but mm-hmm. I put approximately 7% of my pre-tax income into that 401k every 2 weeks.
Okay. I mean, you can keep doing that, and if you'd like, you can use a Roth IRA for anything else that's, in my mind at least, you should be doing. You do your 401k, you pay down your outstanding student loan bill, and if you can, if there's a little extra money, then sure, do a Roth. That's fine. But until you get this college loan paid off, I mean, 6.25% is a real number. It's not a 0%. And I would feel much more comfortable once you get this under say, $10,000 to start ratcheting up your retirement savings. But I think that you're in great shape. You've done a really good job of whittling this down. You had money that was at risk by investing. You won that bet. But I don't know what the next X years are going to find. And so, again, I think from a conservative perspective, we pay down the credit card debt. We put our cash flow towards paying down that student loan debt. And you, instead of putting money at risk in the markets right this second, you continue to whittle down the student loans while you are continuing to save for retirement. Does that make sense?
That makes complete sense.
I think that's what we do. And I would not make yourself crazy. You're young, right? How old are you now?
I just literally hit 31 the other day.
Oh, you've got so much time. It's a beautiful thing. So that is why I mean, it's great. Is there anything else that's coming up? Are you partnered, getting married, having children? Is anything happening near term that we need to think about?
I know within the next 5 years, I'll be in a position, or I know I want to purchase an income property. Now, living in New York, I have rent, but will be purchasing some type of house or home outside of the state.
Okay.
Which is why I have some concerns about my, obviously, credit score and FICO score. Considering if I do pay down the debt, which has been a burden, also has been the thing that's kept my credit score very good.
Well, let me just say that you kept your credit score good. So here's what you don't have to worry about that. If you pay off your loan, it doesn't hurt your credit score. But what you should not do is do not close the credit card account when you pay it off. Keep it open.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only because it's the credit score is based on lots of different factors. The most important is, do you pay your bills on time? The other is, how much of your available credit are you utilizing? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So just don't close out that credit card account once you pay off the $8,000 bill. Keep the credit card. All right? It doesn't mean you have to. I mean, you can use it and pay the bill every month, but just don't accumulate debt on it and don't close it. And by having an installment loan, which is student loan, that will keep your credit score nice and robust. But you promise to call back when you're ready to buy that property so we can really see if that's in your best interest.
Oh, I absolutely will. The most satisfying check I think I'll ever write is that check that ties off the student loan.
Yes, baby. Yes. All right. Good luck. Thanks so much for calling, Andrea. All right. If you have a financial question, we want to hear from you. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. AskJill@JillOnMoney.com. We'll be right back.
It's the weekend, and that can only mean one thing. You're listening to Jill on Money. Here she is, Jill Schlesinger.
What you want, baby?
You're back with Jill on Money. I love this song. The legendary queen, Aretha Franklin. I was just listening to a little Aretha Franklin when I was traveling around. I found some great old stuff. I was not in a pink Cadillac. No, I was not. But some of that old stuff is so fantastic. It really is. You are listening to the show that takes the mystery out of your financial life, but only if you let us know what's going on in that mysterious financial life of yours. Give us a holler, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Let's go out and take a call. It's Cheryl from Massachusetts. Hi, Cheryl. How can I help you today?
I just retired about a year and a half ago, and I am able to spend a little bit more time now looking at our portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
We hired a financial planner a few years back, and we're very happy with him.
Mm-hmm.
But I did a spreadsheet on the fees that he's actually getting per year,
mm-hmm.
and 2% didn't sound like a lot until I actually looked.
Okay, so the investment advisory fee is 2%. Now, here's my question to you. How big is the portfolio?
It's over $1 million.
What?
Yeah.
2% for $1 million portfolio? You're getting screwed. You're getting screwed. That's the best way I can say it. He might be a nice guy, but that's too much to pay. Well, I should also start to ask you some other questions instead of being that knee jerk, okay? So let's rewind the tape. Oh, 2% seems like a little bit more expensive than I'd like for $1 million portfolio. Okay, so what else does he do? Does he do like full big time financial planning for you guys?
No, in the beginning when we first went with him, he explained what he did, what his strategy was,
mm-hmm.
and I'm happy with him.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, once I figured out how much I was giving him, it was over $17,000 last year.
It hurts, doesn't it? And
yeah,
by the way,
and I'm like, is that what typically a financial planner does? I mean, he doesn't really do anything else but manage that money.
Mm-hmm. It's not like you're saying to him, could you, you know, give me new pension calculations every month? Or you're not asking him to do a lot more of heavy-duty financial planning work for you, right?
He did in the beginning before I retired
mm-hmm.
to see if I could retire,
mm-hmm.
if I was able to retire. And the numbers all looked good. And here I am retired now and
mm-hmm.
have more time to look at these things. And
this is interesting. So when you say you're happy with him, you mean you're happy with the performance? You feel like you're comfortable?
I am happy with the performance.
Is it individual stocks?
Most of it, yes.
Okay, so I have a totally fabulous idea for you. All right?
Okay.
Because you like him, and I think that is fine. I don't want to like tell you, go away, mm-hmm. don't do that. But I think that you go to him and you say, 2% feels like a really high fee when I compare fees that are out there, okay? Because generally, we start to see 2% with portfolios of under $500,000. So I would first say to him, hey, can you help me on the fee? Because I just, you know, you can say, I understand that fees are really a lot lower with many financial advisors around. And you could say that. Look, even if he went from, say, 2% to 1.5%, that 0.5% savings goes right to your bottom line.
I do want to mention that he doesn't charge any other fee as far as buying or selling stocks. I don't pay anything else other than that 2%.
Okay, so that includes all of your transaction costs. Which
correct.
Okay, still a little high for me. Is he actively trading that much? I can't imagine that he's going in and out and in and out.
No, he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
he doesn't.
Okay, so then here's your other idea. So let's say that he says, Cheryl, this is my fee. Tough luck. Like it or lump it. You know, he could.
Yeah.
He might. Then what I do think would be good for you is to get a second opinion. And I think that there's plenty of people who would be happy to talk to you and say, I mean, they're going to try to sell you their services. But I think that what would be interesting is for you to see what else is out there. Because this portfolio, first of all, that you have individual stocks is interesting, number one. But number two, the fact that it's all stocks makes me a little nervous. I mean, do you have a pension?
I do. I have a pension of about $30,000 a year.
And are you married?
Yes.
You forgot to mention that. No, I'm just kidding. You did say we. And is spouse retired as well?
No.
Okay.
Still working.
And so you're not drawing on this $1 million portfolio,
no,
right?
No, not at all.
Okay. Your husband, when do you think he might retire?
Not for another 5 years, maybe.
That's my favorite kind of spouse, the one that keeps working.
We have to for the insurance.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, so your husband will retire in 5 years. And then how much money does he have set aside for retirement?
He has about, he started with a new company a few years back. Mm-hmm. So he has about $80,000 mm-hmm. In his 401, 403B right now.
Okay. So I think there's two big issues that would actually be a good reason for you to get a second opinion. But even if you love this guy, okay? Number one is the fee. And by the way, for advisors out there, see what happens when you get to be a pig? You raise the radar of your client, and now we're going to go get a second opinion. But that's what happens. Hey, sorry. Okay. But the second thing is, I'm not keen on the fact that you're mostly in stocks. I do not see why someone in your situation should have that much risk. So I would like to do this. I'm going to have Mark pick up the phone. We're going to get your email address. And
okay.
I'm going to give you a couple of names of people. I can't do this for everyone, by the way, because I just happen to know in the Massachusetts broader area, I know some people who are doing business there. And Cheryl, I'm going to send you the names of a couple of advisors that will give you a second opinion. And that's what we're going to do. And I think that that's a good game plan. Nothing sudden, no sudden moves. But, you know, and maybe we go get that second opinion first, and then you go back to the advisor, and then we ask for a reduction in fee. All right. When we come back, we're going to cover more of your questions. Give us a holler, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
Wondering how to make your money work for you? Get on the line now, 855-411-JILL. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number is 855-411-JILL. Our email address, askjill@jillonmoney.com. You can follow us on Twitter @JillOnMoney, where Mark is busily trying to convince me that we're adding more people faster than we're losing them, which he says we are. If you have questions about whatever is going on in your life, we'd like to hear from you. But if you want to just kind of do a little research, hop onto our website, JillOnMoney.com. Some fun content there, video, old radio shows. You can check out our YouTube channel. Just search Jill Schlesinger and do subscribe to our podcast. It's called Better Off. You can get it on Apple, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, anywhere else you find your favorite podcasts. So we'd love to hear from you and love to get you listening to slightly different content that we have created. All right. Okay. This is from BJ, who says, I am retired, 72 years of age, and I've got some money in an IRA from when I worked. I already had to take my minimum required distribution based on that IRS regulation. Here is my question. Should I withdraw over a period of time and pay the taxes yearly or close out the account and be done with it? Because of my retired status, the money is no longer managed or reinvested by the company. Thank you for your insight. I don't know what that last bit means, but in general, I like dribbling out the minimum required distributions or required minimum distributions because it sort of keeps your tax bill to a minimum. But if you've got a tiny account and it doesn't change your tax bracket and you just want to be done with it, I guess you could do it. I mean, look, the longer the money stays tax deferred, the better off it would be for you. But so in general, my preference is to dribble it out. But either way, you're going to be fine. Okay, Earl wants to know, says, our financial advisor wants us to sign a form for options trading and margin. Is this a good idea? No, this is not a good idea. There's absolutely no reason why you have to have options trading. And I wouldn't see, and as a former options trader, I would say don't do that. The margin agreement, some brokers like you to have a margin agreement just open. What is margin? Margin means that you have the ability to purchase securities with borrowed funds. And there are a lot of rules around margin. I don't know what kind of investor you are, but in general, I would say, you know what, Earl? You don't need to sign that kind of an account. I would leave that be. And ask, why do I have to sign that? I would ask the broker or the advisor, him or herself. You know? Oh, gosh. Sometimes it's hard. I want to say something nice about the industry. It's just sometimes they make it really hard for us. You know what I mean, Mark? Mark, how are you feeling about all this research about women and retirement? I got a new study from Transamerica about what 64% of women don't have a retirement backup plan. Just 10% are confident about retirement. Just over half plan to retire after age 65 or not at all. 3/4 of women who are offered a plan do participate in it. I don't know. I don't know why we still have to have these specific facts that are female versus male based, but I guess it's a way to appeal to women to say, kick it into gear, sisters, because statistically you're going to outlive your husbands or your partners. I just think that sometimes people blow off this research. The fact that half of these women plan to work after they retire, to me is interesting, but it sort of jives with a lot of other studies. We just want people to pay attention to their retirement. We want people, and women and men, to really be clear that they're going to have to do more than use Social Security. And we want you to take this into your own hands, to take control more than anything else. If you could just take control of this process, you'd be so much better off. And for some reason, women seem, at least statistically, based on not just this study, but other studies, that women are not planning to manage their financial lives as actively as we would like. On the other hand, I would also say that just be careful that you're not falling prey to some marketer who's like, oh, I'm going to put like a pretty pink ribbon on my marketing materials and I'm really geared towards women. I'm not exactly sure why someone would be geared towards women, except like maybe you want to work with a woman. But there are plenty of guys who are great advisors, phenomenal advisors, who work incredibly well with women. So I wouldn't shut the door on them either. It's the same exact process. You've got to figure out what you're spending today. You got to figure out how much of that you're going to need in the future. You have to use a calculator to help you determine whether you're on track to save enough. And if you're not, you need to save more. It's sort of simple. I don't like to make it more complicated than necessary. You're listening to Jill on Money. Money is not scary. It's not boring. It's a little bit of fun here. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. AskJill@JillOnMoney.com. We'll be right back. You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, can be pretty much anything. Don't care. Could be cash flow, could be saving, could be investing, estate, insurance. Come on, tell us what's going on. 855-411-JILL. Send an email. AskJill@JillOnMoney.com. Here is a question from Aaron, who says, thank you so much for your podcast and radio show. She actually says, with your producer, Mark. Mark! You have provided valuable money insight to many, including myself. You've also increased my confidence in preparing for my financial future. Love that. Aaron says, I'd love to get your opinion on real estate investment opportunities through companies such as Realty, Mogul, and Fundrise as places to grow a little more income long term. So, Fundrise and Realty Mogul are two of the top crowdfunding real estate platforms that are out there. So they basically make it easier for sponsors to connect with investors for property or real estate deals. I don't know. I'm not that into these ideas. And I'll tell you why. Who needs this? Like, these annual returns, it's always well and good to say, like, I'm just looking at Fundrise has raised, you know, $40 million. That's like nothing, first of all. And they say the average average returns between 10 and 16% today. Yeah, today. That's while the real estate market is booming. And Realty Mogul was founded in 2013. They only have $10 million. These are tiny. I don't know. I'm not into these. I am not incredibly impressed by using crowdfunding versus just a plain old real estate investment trust. And that is an easy thing to do. And there are even indexes of real estate investment trusts. Aaron, you know, you asked the question at the end, is it better to just keep plugging money into an individual taxable account at Betterment after I max out my retirement contributions? Yes, it is better. Thank you. Thanks for writing. And stay tuned. We've got CFP and author Douglas Bonaparte. He is up next at here at Jill on Money. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. Ask Jill at jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.